All right, friends, it's time to pick back up with European Getaway Part 2. Hopefully you listened to last episode about our beginning time in London. Today we continue in London and talk about a little bit of travel mishaps as we try to venture to our next destination. Once again, this is From the Road, and we do have guests joining us, students giving their input and feedback as we go along. Hope you guys are enjoying this trip. And it's time to get started. Let's get going.
Welcome to the Nieces Nugs Podcast.
All right, friends, we are back, and well, it has been several hours later, but it is time to catch up on all the adventures of the crew heading to Europe. Here we go. The plan after going to bed, we're super tired, was to get up early, head to Wimbledon, and see if we couldn't watch some tennis on the day. The plan was to meet in the lobby at 7:30. Well, let's just put it this way. One person made it to the lobby at 7:30, and it was not any of the guys. It was Zoe waiting on all of us, and I was in a room with two boys who just couldn't wake up no matter how much noise I made, and so we missed our chance. It was the one thing I wanted to do, go to Wimbledon. These guys didn't care about me, whatever. So then we shift our plans, and we go to what Zoe wanted to see. She really wanted to see the changing of the guard at Buckingham Palace. So we head down the underground, take the tube, mind the gap, all of these things. We walk to Buckingham Palace. We get there a little earlier than we had originally planned because, well, we had missed our first stop. And we saw tons and tons of people already walking to getting in position. And so Zoe found out the best place to stand to see it all was in the center statue island facing Buckingham Palace. So we grabbed a place to stand and we waited for the activities. Now, Zoe, tell us everything we need to know about the changing of the guard, and would you recommend it to somebody when they're in London?
Yes, I would definitely recommend it. I think that it is just a staple to see. They do it every other day. And we did learn, Alex had asked someone where we should stand, because we were at the middle of the statue, where should we stand, on the left or the right side? And the guy told you, what, the right? Oh, yeah, he said they'll come around both sides. Well, we quickly found out that they do not come around both sides, but that's okay. I feel like anywhere you stand, you still get to see it. It was great. I highly recommend doing it. So,
definitely a lot of pomp and circumstance. We actually saw King Charles himself drive by in a vehicle as everyone was kind of waiting for things to happen. Saw the flags change, which dictate whether he's there or not, whether he's in his royal residence. So we kind of saw those things go down. It was a fun morning, a little slow at times as we're waiting, and then as the actual changing of the guard happens, there's definitely some pomp and circumstance, but it's not all pomp and circumstance. But it's a fun thing to do if you're in London and have multiple days. If you're there for one day, I say skip it. It's not worth it. But if you have multiple days, it's definitely something you can go check out. Tons and tons of people do. From there, we then walked back to the underground and hopped on the tube and headed towards St. Paul's Cathedral. Now, when we get there, it's beautiful, kind of hidden in the midst of buildings when you come out. But just incredible, incredible cathedral to see. And we had the option when we're there to, well, we could either go to the Holy Eucharist service for free. We could pay money to tour the cathedral. We weren't going to do that. Or there was a free pickleball court set up right outside the cathedral. And so what did we do? The spiritual people that we are, we decided to play pickleball. Now, I'm going to let Alex talk a little bit about this pickleball match, because Alex was actually critiquing the people playing ahead of us and their performance. So, Alex, talk to us a little bit about the experience of playing pickleball in the courtyard of St. Paul's Cathedral.
So, as we were playing pickleball, it was me and Max against Mr. David Neese himself. And as you can imagine, for me and Max, it did not go well. We held our own for a little bit, but we lost, as normal. My losing streak.
Say that again for the people in the back.
We lost, and my losing streak against David continues to grow. But yeah, it was cool. Being able to play pickleball with the giant cathedral right behind us, it was really cool. And one of the times I did score a point on David, and some kids walked by and they were cheering. So that was pretty cool. I had an audience when I scored on David. And then we lost the game, but it was cool.
Now listen, you guys hang in there. Alex is going to tell his kids and his grandkids about that one point and the kids cheering. And it's going to be an epic tale. It'll probably be a children's book written about it at some point. The smile on his face was hard to get rid of. So just an incredible thing. You know, listen, the thing about this is that when we were, Alex mentioned losing streak, when we were in Seattle, we had the opportunity to play soccer on the middle of a pier. And so when we saw a pickleball court in London, we said, we have to do this. I just think there's something cool about partaking in the free environments of big cities. And so this was a really cool experience, unique. How many people can say they played pickleball in the courtyard by St. Paul's Cathedral in downtown London? Pretty incredible. So we did that. Nobody was hurt. Nobody got injured. We have some photos. It was a great time. Then we walked across the Millennium Bridge, which crosses the Thames River. To one side, you can see the Tower Bridge. To the other side, you can kind of see some of the landmarks in the distance. As you walk across the Millennium Bridge, you also see Tate Modern Museum, which is a free museum for people to see. And then also Shakespeare's The Globe Theater is right there as well. From there, we walked down just a little bit to Borough Market. This is a food hall and a local vendors market, and it was crowded. We got there about 1 o'clock. It was packed to the gills, and the entry you could tell was a bunch of tourists because they're just standing there looking like they don't know what to do. They think they're supposed to stand in these long lines, and so you just kind of have to get past that. You can kind of walk around them, and I would encourage you to walk around the market and not necessarily take the same path that tourists take. I know we're tourists too, but listen, I can identify tourons, and so you just kind of move around those folks. And we found our place that I had done some research on, the little Argentinian food called Portinas, which was amazing. When we got there, the line was not long at all. We actually kind of were like third person in line. They served empanadas, and they also served steak sandwich and then a local Argentinian sandwich as well. And so, I ordered an empanada and a sandwich. Some of the guys ordered just empanadas, and Zozo ordered the steak sandwich. 10 out of 10 recommend. It was a great. We found a place to sit. It was great. Very affordable as well, considering how much food can cost in London. So great experience. I would encourage you to, you could spend hours in Borough Market, but I wouldn't do it with tourists because that's crazy. From there, we went to the place that we were supposed to start the day at. So after lunch, we boarded the underground. We took a train to another train, and we ended up at Wimbledon. That's right, the All England Lawn and Tennis Club, host of the championships at Wimbledon, the greatest tennis tournament there is. If you're a kid in the United States growing up in the summertime, you probably saw Wimbledon on TV in the mornings because the 6 hour, or when I was in California growing up, the 9 hour time difference allowed you to see it as a morning show when you're waking up and things. It's just incredible. I just have great memories. And so we actually get off the station. There's signs that tell you where to go, and there's this thing called a queue. It's just a fancy word for the line. And in there, if you don't have tickets, this is how you get access to the grounds. Man, wouldn't it be credible if the Masters did something like this, where people who actually wanted to get on should show up and get in, and based on how many people are in. And so we walked through this huge line. There was no real waiting at all. We bought grounds tickets without any issue. We're about £20 per person. Well worth it for this experience. And then we walk into the All England Lawn and Tennis Club, host of Wimbledon. The only thing the grounds passes don't get you is access to center court and to court one, which the day we were there was the semifinals of the men's, the gentlemen's invitational. And so we missed that, but you could watch it in court two, or you could listen to it as well. But one of the cool things was we started the day watching some of the other courts where we got to see wheelchair tennis. Now, Alex, talk to me a little bit about what it was like watching these guys in wheelchair play tennis at Wimbledon.
Yeah, so tennis is already, I think, a pretty hard sport to begin with. I've played it. It's not easy. I'm pretty terrible at it. But watching guys in wheelchairs like move across the court was pretty incredible. I mean, it takes some – I mean, those guys are athletes. I mean, even though they are, you know, not able like other people, I mean, it takes a lot to, you know, use your arms to wheel across like the court and to smack a tennis ball very hard. So that was pretty incredible to see, and it was really cool. I didn't know that they had stuff like that at Wimbledon, or really that was even a thing at all. So that was pretty awesome to see.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. These guys just, I mean, literally one guy would serve it, and as soon as he served it, he'd have to start moving his chair to get in position for the return. We saw the defending champion play that day as well. Really, really cool. So we spent a few minutes watching these guys play, and then we went down to court three, which on court three was listed Martina Navratilova. And as a kid growing up, she was really finishing her reign as a dominant tennis champion. And so it was really cool for me to see her play at Wimbledon in kind of the Legends Invitational division and doubles, mixed doubles. And so we sat there and watched. It was a really fun environment. They were kind of joking around and things like that. And then after we went down and watched some teenagers play doubles, we saw girls play doubles tennis and guys play doubles tennis. And Zoe, what was your impression of Wimbledon in general and the experience itself there?
So growing up, the only thing I really know is the Masters. So I feel like this could equal that if you were to make it in. So it was awesome to see just the environment. I don't even watch tennis, but I feel like just being there was amazing. Just the atmosphere, the excitement, the fashion, the sports. It's amazing. And like knowing that so many celebrities are there and that you're here in the same place. It's amazing. So if you ever get the chance to go, I would say you need to go.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. Exactly what Zoe said. We were actually walking, and the first time I went to the Masters, the very first time I went, the best way I could explain it to somebody was, it's like Disney World for the adult male who loves golf, or for anyone who loves golf. It's like the Disney World of golf. Wimbledon is that in the tennis world. In fact, somebody said that as I was walking by. They were on camera being interviewed, and it's like Disneyland for tennis. Like, they're just this, everyone is happy. Everyone is enjoying themselves. The fashion is incredible. There's people eating strawberries and cream. Like, there's all these incredible moments. People are cheering, watching a beautiful sport played out. The grounds are perfect. Just a great, great day and experience. So we hung out there for several hours, just taking it in making it as hard to believe that we're actually there seeing this as something I grew up watching on TV. And so for my tennis friends, you got to make the trek at some point. It was incredible. After Wimbledon, it was time to start making our way back to the hotel to get our things, because we had left them in the checked luggage room so that we could then go back to the airport. We were flying out. Originally, our planned flight out was at 8:25. When we left Wimbledon, our flight was delayed. So it looked like we were going to get out around 9:30. Or so, maybe an hour delay. There were some issues with weather, supposedly, all across Europe. But we just went ahead and did this. We have some lounge access, and so we decided to make our way. So as this goes on, it actually looks like our delay is going to be less than what it was originally, almost down to 45 minutes. So we go back to our hotel, pick up our luggage, go back to the train, take the underground, the tube, all the way back into Heathrow, which takes quite a bit of time. Make sure you're on the right track, make sure you're on the right trains. But we got there, no problems at all. And then once you get off the underground, it takes probably 10 minutes to walk. And there are some assisted walking paths, but it's probably a 10-minute walk to get to the terminal thing. Now, when you get to the terminals, the little thing about European airports, if you're not familiar, they do check-in a little different. They do everything just a little different. And so we had to make sure we had to work our way through security and make sure that our liquids were taken care of. But everyone got through. We had no major issues except for our cough man lost his cough syrup. Other than that, no big issues. So then we go to our lounge. Now, one of the things with the way I'm doing credit cards these days is I do have access to some lounges, and one of my credit cards allows me to bring in two guests, but I've never been able to bring in three guests, which has been kind of a tough thing for our family, because trying to figure out how do I get all four of us in a lounge. But now I have two memberships to the Priority Pass. So this was my first trip trying this out, where I wanted to get four people in using two different passes. So we go to this lounge, and it worked. I basically scanned two people in for the first time and then used a second pass to scan my additional guest in. No issues at all. All four of us got in, had meal, had nice little rest spot while we could wait on our flight. And so we did that. So let me ask you this question. Alex, for somebody who's never been in a lounge, What was the experience like, just in general, not necessarily that specific one, but what was the experience like sitting in a lounge versus sitting in a crowded airport? And talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I really didn't know what to expect from a lounge. It was extremely nice. We were already pretty tired, so being able to relax in a pretty relaxing environment, eat some food on, you know, with some comfortable couches and stuff, it was nice, especially before the experience that we had later on the airplane. But it was very nice. I think it's recommended if you're able to do it. It's a lot better than having a lot of people that are probably not in the best of moods around you, especially in an airport. So yeah, it was very nice.
Yeah, these lounges are tough because I think they're amazing. I like being away from the crowds. I like having free Wi-Fi. I like having access to personal restrooms. I like having the ability to sit in a comfortable seat and wait on my flight. I don't partake in the alcoholic beverages, so I don't get the most money of its worth, and so I don't think it's necessarily worth it to pay for it every time. But as a free perk to these credit cards, I absolutely think it's something to use and can be used. I think it's a great spot. They are becoming more and more popular. And so far, I've also heard that in Europe, the lounges happen to be a little nicer than in the States. So I'm interested to check that out. We're going to check out a couple more as we travel. So it looks like our flight is it's landed. It's ready to board. So we leave the lounge. We head towards our spot. And one of the ways they do check-in, too, is you check in with your ticket and your ID. So that then you put you in another lounge so that when it's time to board, they're not checking that as well. So there's like these little stalls, if you will. And so we go, ours is open, we're ready to check in. And Zoe and I are traveling with the smallest roller board you could have. The guys are traveling, we have book bags as well. The guys have book bags and duffel bags. And we get there, we notice that they're taking every roller board, even though we're allowed to bring it on board. And I'm like, this flight is already delayed. I do not want to check this bag. I do not want to wait on my luggage. There's no way. I'm allowed to bring this on board. And so we get up there, and I'm in zone 5. Zoe's in zone 7. The other guys are in zone 7, so I'm not really worried about them as much because they'll be able to get on with their stuff. We get up there, and the guy says, I'm going to have to check your luggage. And it was good that Zoe was next to me. I said a couple of words of peace, you know, without getting kicked off the flight. I made it known that according to what was online, that I was allowed to bring this on. And then he went on this spiel about that if everyone had a bag, blah, 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 but everyone wasn't carrying one of those bags. And so we had to check our luggage, which was depressing because we were going to be landing in Prague already past midnight. And I don't want to wait on luggage or take the chance that our luggage didn't arrive. But lo and behold, this is what we had to do. And so I made sure that the luggage got downstairs. I was watching out the window. They were making fun of me as I was making sure the luggage got loaded onto a cart because I wanted to make sure it got on the plane because we had no way of tracking it at this point. And so once it did, then we got on the plane. And as I was getting on the plane, and as Zoe, as you were getting on the plane, what did you notice about the overhead bins as we were getting on the plane?
I noticed as soon as I walked in that there was tons of room, even in the front of the plane, in the upper compartments. And then even when I sat down, there was my book bag by itself next to an empty compartment. And I was like, I feel like David and I could have fit our suitcases in these upper head bins.
Yeah, British Airways, you got to do better. The flight crew was amazing. The flight crew on the plane was absolutely awesome, but the boarding crew was absolutely terrible. There were bins everywhere, so everyone's checking their bag, and there was no need to because there was tons of room available on this thing, especially for the amount of little luggage that they actually took on. Now, when I was on the jet bridge, just a little quick personal story, man, it got really, really tense in the sense of like this dude kept staring at me and I was like, bro, what is going on? I don't know who this guy is. Gave me the weird vibes to the point where I was like, something might go down on this flight. This guy is acting strange. Either he's got something planned or this is his first flight and he's super nervous. And we made it. So I'm guessing it was his second flight or first flight. He's really nervous. But like he kept staring at me, muttering things. And you know me, I don't back down. I'm just staring right back at him. What's up, dude? Let's talk about it, right? And so we get on the plane, and I even texted my wife, hey, if things go down, no pun intended, 19 A and B are your cause. Not text you really want to send your wife before you get on a plane to travel. Hey, I love you, but if this thing happens this way, this is where it's coming from. But it was really, really weird vibes coming from there. And anyways, we get on this plane, and we find out really quickly that the flight is not only delayed an hour, the pilot comes on and says it's going to be delayed another hour, and that we have to sit there for an hour on the plane, and that they're going to do their best to take care of us, of course, right? And so then an hour goes by. He comes back on the plane again, on the intercom again, and tells us it's going to be another hour and 50 minutes delay. So at this point, we're 3 hours and 50 minutes delayed, according to the timeline. And for then he says, we're going to have to stay on the plane, but we're going to push back. And the airport actually closes at 11, but they're going to push back to 1 to let us, you know, for some people to get out of here. I'm thinking we're toast. Like, I'm starting to scan other flights to see if we can take another flight to Prague. I'm trying to figure out what we're going to do. It's crazy. There's really no other solution except for this plane has to take off. And so we push back, and we're sitting in the middle of nowhere waiting on air traffic control to give us clearance. And so we finally get cleared 3 hours from the original departure time. We're 3 hours late, which puts us landing in Prague at about 2:30 a.m. maybe. And once we land, keep in mind, we still have to go through customs. We still have to go through passport control. We still have to get our luggage. And then we have to get an Uber driver to get us to our hotel. We pull into the hotel just to skip all the nonchalant stuff. Look, we pull in the hotel about 3:30. And we walk into the front counter. Well, our Uber driver was awful. Probably the worst Uber driver I've ever. He stops, right? He didn't speak any English. First Uber driver canceled on us at 3 in the morning. Just didn't show up. And then we got another Uber driver, shows up, and we're leaving the airport, and he just stops at a gas station without saying a word, looks at me, says something in Czech that I have no idea what he says, looks at me like I'm an idiot because I didn't understand, and then walks into the gas station. And we all look at each other like, what is going on? And then he walks out with coffee. I'm like, what? Like, bro, we need to get to our hotel. So finally, and then he starts driving, and it's the slowest Uber driver you've ever. Imagine your 85-year-old grandmother driving an Uber. That's about the pace with which we were going. I mean, it was painfully slow. We get to the hotel. We walk in, and the guy at the front desk says, I'm not going to be able to check you in for at least 15 minutes because our computers are shutting down. Please have a seat in the lobby. Sir, it is 3:30 in the morning. What are we talking about right now? I can't make this stuff up. We literally have to sit in the lobby and wait for the computer system to reboot at 3:30 in the morning so we can get our hotel room. But we did. And we finally got our rooms. And they were nice. They were nice rooms. We slept great. And then it was time to explore the wonderful city of Prague, which we'll bring and talk to you about later on. So come back and check it out. Any last parting words about the travel day from either Zoe or Alex? Talk to us a little bit about what you remember most about London. It was a long day. Or about traveling, something that you stuck out in your mind.
London was awesome. I think just seeing Buckingham Palace and all the history. And I feel like just sitting at changing of the guards and talking about all the royal drama. That was so fun. So I think just being there in that environment. And then traveling, it was awful, but it was worth it. I think it was worth it.
Yeah, London's definitely one of my favorite cities I've been to. There's a sense of really old history with a touch of modern in it, too. It was really cool, and they speak English there, so that's even better. You can understand everything. But, yeah, the travel was pretty bad, but we're in another amazing city, so can't really complain about that.
Yeah, I was thinking about this. This is the last thing I'm going to say. London was great. I do appreciate London. I appreciate the history. Some people don't like it for whatever reason. I think it's a great place. I wouldn't want to spend the rest of my life there, but it's a great place to visit. And I do appreciate some of the smaller towns. Like when we were at Southfields going to Wimbledon, it's just a cute little town as you walk around and people's lives are just right there, which is really cool. Here's what I'll say about traveling, friends. Some people travel, they have instances like we have, and it just kind of discourages them from traveling. What you'll hear from us constantly is, it's worth it. Like, things are going to happen. Nobody's going to hit a home run, especially if you're traveling with Alex Martin. You're going to have delays. But the reality is traveling and seeing the world and seeing what this has to offer is worth it. And so the best way to prepare is to be prepared with other alternatives to figure out, okay, if things happen, then this is what we do. When people generally freak out is when there's no other viable solution. So, for example, when I didn't know if the plane were actually going to take off, I'm sitting there figuring out, okay, how do we get to where we need to get when we need to get there? And so I had a train map mapped out. It would have taken all day for the next day to do it, but it would have been an experience. And you just kind of embrace it and move along, and then you go on from there. So while there are things to complain about, while there are things to kind of point out, man, that's what gives us great stories, great content. But at the end of the day, you need to travel. And so put London on your list. And so far, what I can say is put Prague on your list. And more about that to come.